not so long ago, if you dropped out of high school, you could still manage to find a good blue-collar job. But today, the people who seem to be hurting the most in our sputtering economy are dropouts in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Despite their work experience, some can't even apply for a new job without proof that they completed high school.
That's from a special report by NPR's Claudio Sanchez last month about the high school dropout crisis. Even 20 years ago, it was easier to get a job without a high school degree. That's all changed now. Now, even if the job skills have nothing to do with a high school education, most employers demand the degree. Coming up, we'll get some strategies for Central Ohio and hear what's happening around the area in terms of addressing the crisis of high school dropouts. But joining us now is John Bridgeland. He's president and CEO of Civic Enterprises. It's a public policy firm in Washington, D.C. John was recently appointed by President Obama to the White House Council for Community Solutions. His work on the high school dropout crisis has attracted national attention to the issue, including a Time cover story and two Oprah Winfrey shows. John Bridgeland led the National Summit on America's Silent Epidemic with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the National Governors Association, Time Magazine, and MTV that prompted action at the federal, state, and local levels around a 10-point plan of action to boost high school graduation rates and college and workforce readiness. He also co-authored the report, Building a Grad Nation, showing progress across 29 states in boosting high school graduation rates and launching a civic Marshall Plan to meet the national goal of 90% high school graduation rates by 2020. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, Ann. Nice to be with you.
For our listeners, our question to you today, were you or are you a high school dropout? And have you overcome that handicap? Give us a call now and share your story about what your experience has been and how you've overcome the dropout label. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We miss you. So, John Bridgeland, what's the magic in 90% high school graduation rate by 2020? Where did that goal come from, and why are those numbers the ones that were picked?
Yes, currently the national graduation rate is about 75%. Until recently, about one-third of all public high school students and about half of minorities in the United States were failing to graduate with their class. The good news, however, is that in the last number of years, we've seen increases in high school graduation rates across about 29 states, and some states like Tennessee have made progress in boosting the rates by 15 percentage points over a period of about 7 years. So actually the president and bipartisan leaders came forward with this national goal of 90% high school graduation rates so that over the course of the next decade, those literally starting fourth grade this year, if we can keep them on track so that by the time they're seniors in high school, they'll finish high school in the class of 2020 at rates around the country of 90%, It's a stretch goal, but we believe it's a realistic goal, you know, within reach.
My guest is John Bridgeland. His work with the high school dropout crisis has helped bring national attention to the issue with the Time cover story Dropout Nation and two Oprah Winfrey shows prompted by his report, The Silent Epidemic. He's speaking today at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. If you want more information on that, we'll post the link to their website at ours at wosu.org/allsides. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to share your story about being a dropout and how you overcame that. And if you haven't, tell us how you're coping at this point in time and with this economy. So, John, is that goal realistic because a couple states have made these strides like Tennessee? What about the rest of the country and what's holding us back?
Here in Ohio, Ohio has, you know, they talk about the Big Eight. There's a new focus in the country with good data to figure out, you know, where are we losing most of these young people? And we discovered that more than 50% of the dropouts were coming from just 15% of the schools. And so with a focused effort in these large school districts to make them more personalized learning environments to connect what young people want to be in life to what they're learning in the classroom. Also, we recognize, we did a survey, we discovered that after 100 years of research, no one had ever talked to the customer, to the dropouts themselves. So we did this study called The Silent Epidemic and just listened to young people all across the country who had dropped out from school. And what we discovered, that wasn't just academic challenges. Many had life challenges. They needed a job. They needed to care for someone in the home. Some young girls got pregnant, didn't see the means to stay in school and raise a child. But most of the young people cited this disconnection between school and what they wanted to be. This young girl in Philadelphia told us she wanted to be an astrophysicist. And yet she saw nothing in school. No one was making the connection between what she wanted to be and what she was learning in school.
How do you do that, though? Who goes into high school, for instance? And by the way, it's a high school diploma, not a high school degree we're talking about. How do you customize so much so that you're going to capture so many kids that are falling through the cracks?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You can predict as early as third and fourth grade through what are called these early warning systems. The attendance, behavior, and course performance, it's up to 70% predictive of whether a young people will go on to drop out from high school. And so with these early warning systems, program like the YMCA and communities and schools and Boys and Girls Clubs working in concert with counselors and teachers with this data can identify the 10 to 15% of young people who really need extra support and get them the wraparound and community-based supports they need to stay in school, to address any behavior or other issues, health issues, and to get them the extra tutoring and mentoring to help them stay on track with reading and math. Over time, the challenge is to, you know, with good counselors and good teachers, is to make a connection between the curriculum, what they're learning in the classroom, and whether it's a service learning project in the community, whether it's art and music and drama, trying to find some interest that keeps that young person who has maybe on the verge of dropping out, keep them in the system. And then try to show a connection between classroom learning and what they want to be in life.
The dropout rates that we're grappling with now, the epidemic, the crisis, has it been like that for a long, long time? Has that been the tradition in the United States, and it's only a crisis now because we need better educated citizens to get jobs?
It's a wonderful question. Remember that breakthrough report, A Nation at Risk,
right.
1983. We were losing our way in education vis-a-vis the rest of the world. The one hopeful sign that report cited was an increase in high school graduation rates up to about 70%. The problem is a generation ago, 73% of the workers, of the 91 million workers in the United States, could function in the workplace with a high school diploma or less. So you had a lot of high school dropouts that were doing relatively well in the workforce. Today, it's about 36% that can function. And just for context, we have 95 million high and middle skilled jobs in the United States, 97 million high and middle skilled jobs in the United States, for which we only have 45 million qualified workers. Right here in Ohio, more than 70,000 positions are available that cannot be filled by qualified workers. So it's a remarkable skills gap that this both the high school and the college dropout epidemics are fueling. And if we don't address it and close that gap, we're going to continue to have to look for workers in outside our country. And obviously that hurts our global competitiveness and our ability as a nation to basically, as Chairman Ben Bernanke has said, we have to educate our way out of this tough economy.
The story about the student or the dropout who wanted to be an astrophysicist is kind of remarkable, because what was she thinking? How did she think she would achieve that goal by dropping out of school, regardless of how school, someone with that kind of aspiration and that kind of, that level of aspiration surely knows you're not going to get there not being in high school.
Yes. She was a little girl from Philadelphia. Was disconnected from school. She had tremendous family challenges in her life. She reported a teacher in science that she thought she was going to connect to, but she said this teacher didn't know my name, didn't make an effort, didn't realize I was actually interested in the NASA space program. We asked her, what was your best day? And she said, my best day was when I read a letter from a Birmingham city jail that Martin Luther King had written. And because I was doing a community service project in Philadelphia that had to do with helping people like me, and she was an African-American girl, she said, I made a connection. And I went home that night. I bragged to my parents. It was my best day. The teacher called on me. I knew everything in that letter from a Birmingham city jail. And she said there were just far too few days like that. Now, to your question, when we asked the dropouts, who was responsible for your dropping out? And we said, was it the schools? Was it the teachers? Was it the parents? Was it, you know, someone else? Disproportionately, they accepted responsibility. And then after they dropped out and had to try to hold down a job and raise a family and saw how tough it was, 81% said it was the worst decision of their lives and desperate for credit recovery programs and efforts like the Y and others have to reintegrate and get back into the schools, not go back to the high school where you're the old person who is viewed as dumb and incapable, but in an alternative program with people your age who could get a GED or a high school diploma and then hopefully go on and get some college so you could more successfully enter the workforce.
You also learned in that study that most states permit students to drop out at the age of 16, that most students who missed or dropped out of school were never contacted by the school, nor were their parents. And that whole culture reeks of tacit approval.
It really does. We were shocked. In the focus groups initially, we talked to these young people, and they talked about how they went into school and were permitted under state law to sign out at the age of 16, and often with their parents' consent. And we realized that the majority of states, 32 states in the United States, permitted students in this country to drop out at 16. So we went back and discovered all these laws were written around 1907, 1910, when young people had to be working on farms and in factories, and when you didn't need a high school education to function in the economy. So we went to the nation's governors, and we got 12 governors to raise their compulsory school age law to 17 or 18. And some states have gone further. Tennessee has said, given the costs of dropouts to traffic fatalities and accidents and the insurance costs associated with that, we're going to suspend your driver's license if you drop out of school, which is it seems like a pretty – what's interesting, it's been shown to be part of the success story of how Tennessee has raised its graduation rates by 15%. Now, is that sufficient? No. You need a lot of supports for these young people. You can't just throw them back into the same environment that caused them to fail. It has to be part of a kind of a comprehensive approach really driven by the school and the school district. To connect these young people back to school.
And it's not just about the individual who's going to be underemployed and under compensated as they get older. It's also about society. I mean, it's people say we can't afford to do this. We can't afford these special schools. We can't afford these special programs. We got to cut back. We got to, you know, what's in it for the rest of us?
Absolutely. It's interesting. The most compelling piece of information that's mobilized the business community, businesses like AT&T that have taken this issue on with a $100 million investment through their Aspire program, are in part driven by the fact that this costs our economy and our nation. NPR reported on its program last week. It costs the nation up to $320 billion a year. That was a B, billion, in lost revenues from productive workers. A high school, a college graduate will earn more than $1 million more over their lifetimes than a high school dropout. A high school graduate will earn over their lifetimes more about $200,000 more than a high school dropout. And so obviously that's productive income into the economy. Those are wages and generate revenue. In turn, the social service costs here in the state of Ohio, if Ohio were to increase high school graduation rates just among males by 5%, it would save $233 million in crime-related services, incarceration services, and also additional revenues just for the state of Ohio. So the economic case for addressing the dropout epidemic is overwhelming. And in fact, that's what's caused a lot of policymakers, the president, and governors around the nation to really take this on.
My guest is John Bridgeland. We're talking about the dropout epidemic in the United States. Maybe it's not as any worse than it ever has been, but the need for qualified students who have high school diplomas has increased. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, Don Hurd from the YMCA in Central Ohio. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Checking the weather forecast for Central Ohio, a very pleasant one for the next few days. A high today around 79 degrees with lots of sunshine. Tonight, a low around 58, good sleeping weather. On Thursday, a high near 78 degrees and a Thursday night low of 56. By Friday, the little warmer temperature, 83, but it still should be mostly sunny. By Saturday, however, we'll get into a chance of showers. 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Saturday, and a high expected to be near 82 degrees. Right now, we have 74 degrees and sunshine in Central Ohio. Get access to 89.7 NPR News anytime at WOSU.org. You can hear local and national news all day, every day, from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen to WOSU, to 89.7 NPR News online anytime at WOSU.org. And don't forget our zine, WOSU's Arts and News Culture Magazine. It's available online at WOSU.org/artzine. Find out about the arts in Central Ohio.
We're talking about the dropout, the high school dropout epidemic in the United States. Still with us is John Bridgelin. His work on the high school dropout crisis helped bring national attention to the issue. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd love to hear from some former or current high school dropouts and tell us about how you're coping and maybe if you have a success story, all the better. Also joining us now is Don Hurd. He's Executive Director of Juvenile Justice and Truancy Programs for the YMCA of Central Ohio. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. Tell us about, first, there's two programs we want to talk about, PALS, Positive Alternative Learning, and program for students, and also your truancy centers. But let's start with PALS first.
Okay.
What does it do?
PALS is an alternative to suspension program. We do business with Columbus City Schools and Southwestern City Schools. Again, those are the two largest school districts in Central Ohio, so we're happy to be working with them. For Columbus City, the students are there anywhere from 3 to 5 days. They're there for a variety of reasons, usually things like cursing out teachers. They try not to send them for truancy of school unless that's the only option. Defiant of school rules. And just insubordination, and also fighting was also big ones. For Southwestern City Schools, we work with their two intermediate schools and their middle schools. So for Columbus, we have more of a bigger population. They're 6th through 12th grades. The majority of the students who participate in the program are middle school students and also 9th graders who are making that transition into high school.
So what's the connection between students who are suspended and dropout?
Well, kids who are getting suspended, if they're seeking and being involved in alternative programs, there's some placement for them in programs like ours. Kids who are getting suspended and who are out on the street, they're generally out there making some poor decisions. One, they're actually breaking a city ordinance law about being out on the street between the hours of 8:30 and 2:30 in the afternoon, and that's why they're actually picked up by the Columbus police. The ones who are out there making poor choices like selling drugs, hooking up with other kids from other schools on buses, stealing at shopping malls. There's a significant number of young people who also take advantage of us working class people, and they break in our houses while we're at work every day. So they kind of time and see what's going on, and they take advantage of an opportunity.
Are kids who get suspended often, or do you look at suspension rates, and can you make some extrapolate from there that they're probably going to be a dropout eventually?
Well, a lot of the kids who get picked
because
up.
Because I was suspended in high school.
Okay. Well, I can say, and I won't knock on the table, but I was never suspended from high school or middle school, so I'm happy to say that. You know, a significant number of kids who are picked up by the police are suspended from school. And some of them, those kids have not taken the information home to their parents. They're intercepting the phone calls at home. And they're just not ready or prepared to deal with the consequences of the negative behavior that they, you know, do in school.
614-292-8513, if you'd like to give us a call. We're talking about the high school dropout epidemic in the United States. If you have a question or comment, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Tony in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Tony. Hello, Tony. Okay. We've lost Tony. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So isn't, Don, what's the difference between what you do and just keeping them off the streets?
Okay, well, in the PALS program, they actually come there. They'll get credit for attendance and credit for the schoolwork if they complete the program. Again, for Columbus, they're assigned 3 to 5 days. For Southwestern City Schools, they're assigned about 10 days. They'll go through an intake. We'll get some family history, some social history, kind of talk to them about why they get suspended so much. Based on that intake, we may refer them for additional services. We may refer them to Family Focus, which is a local counseling center. Columbus City Schools and Southwestern have contracts with Directions for Youth, which is a counseling center that will work with them on alcohol and drug issues, anger management, decision-making, that type of thing. We also bring speakers into the program that talk about conflict resolution, decision-making, that type of thing. Like the Huck House will come and do a lot of workshops with us. We bring community police officers from time to time. They come in and talk. We used to bring some Secret Service men in, but they've been pretty busy here the past 7 or 8 years, so we don't have them come in as often. Every now and then we may get a personal testimony from an ex-offender. I personally kind of screen and go through the information that they're going to talk about. I find when that person is having a real good day making a presentation, it's highly effective. That person generally will have those students' attention, and it's not so much from the kid's perspective, tell me what prison is really like. They want to hear about their life. They want to hear about the decisions you've made. They want to hear about what kind of messes did you get in when you were my age that led to your incarceration. And most of them are very open to share that information. I find it to be very helpful within our program.
John Bridgeland, are these the sorts of programs that you're seeing out there that help? Because it's not about teaching them book learning. It's not about book learning. It's about how you fit into society.
Programs like PALS are a lifeline to thousands of kids across the United States and obviously here in Columbus. It's remarkable to me that when a young person is in trouble and desperate for help, our response as a school system is to suspend them, disconnect them from perhaps one of the few things in the community that has some connection for them. Thank goodness we have alternative programs like PALS that really take these students back in, understand what their family circumstances are, their conditions are, their problems are, their issues are, and then reconnect them to getting credit in school and hopefully moving on to the biggest predictor. You asked if suspension and dropout is related. They're so strongly connected. The biggest predictor of dropping out is your attendance record over time. It's for most young people, it's a slow process of disengagement. It's not a decision you make. You wake up on a single morning and decide to drop out of school. You can see a pattern literally from third and fourth grade on of attendance. The other tragic thing is in many schools in America today, school systems cannot tell you who is in school and who isn't.
I was going to ask
and
you about that, how you work that out.
I was in Siegelville, Texas, and this parent told me a story of her. A teacher saw her one day and said, "Hey, where is Belinda?" And the parent said, "What do you mean, where is Belinda?" And the teacher says, "Well, she hadn't been in school in 42 days. And yet there was no phone call. I guess they didn't have an active working number for the parent. And just remarkable to me that the simple thing of keeping regular lists of who's in school and who isn't, and then who is in an alternative program. So these are what Don talked about. These are lifelines for thousands of kids.
So Don Hurd, is your trigger then kids who are being picked up for truancy and that's how they get into PALS? Or how do you get the information it's supposed to be private?
For PALS, the school is actually making a referral through the parent. And so that gives us permission to work with them. Again, for truancy, sometimes when the police are picking up kids, they are supposed to be assigned to our PALS program. And we'll work with them and navigate them back into our program. And we were talking about truancy earlier. When the students are picked up by the Columbus Police, we will contact their home school. We'll contact their parent. We'll try to retrieve their attendance records. That way we can share their attendance with their parents when they show up. A lot of times parents are not getting that information. They also receive a piece of paper which dictates the law in Central Ohio, which defines habitual and chronic truant. They're scheduled for a three-hour workshop at East High School. It's a parenting and child workshop. They're able to make some goals and some choices, and they sit down and put together a development plan. The second time they're picked up, they receive a letter from the Division of Police saying that just the second time your child has been picked up. The third time, the Columbus Police is actually filing charges on you. And I want to make a point. all the kids that are picked up are not Columbus City schools. There's a significant number of charter school kids that are picked up. There's a significant number of high school dropouts that are out on the street that need to get that are getting picked up and brought in. So we're working with everybody who comes in the door. One year we had a student as far away as Studentville, Ohio, that navigated his way to Columbus, Ohio by noon that day, and he got picked up. And, of course, we contacted his parents. His parents had to drive here to pick him up.
614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call and talk to our guest, Don Hurd. He's executive director of the Juvenile Justice Program at the YMCA of Central Ohio. Alvin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I have a question regarding the PAL program. And the question is, what are the organizational goals of the program, and how do you measure success? And if the guest could share some metrics or statistics of those successes, that would be appreciated.
Okay. We're running, for PALs, we're running about a 71% success rate.
And how do you, what's that mean?
Success being the student came, he or she completed their schoolwork. He or she was not a big enough discipline problem for us to remove them from the program. Unfortunately, there's about 25% of the students who don't make it through the program. They're removed for violation of our, YMCA code of conduct, obviously. They may come there and engage in malicious activity like fighting, excessive profanity. We try our best to work through a lot of those things, and we're big on giving the kids choices. I try not to back them into a corner and tell them what they need to do. It's either you want to be here to get credit for attendance, and if you don't, let's talk about why you don't.
How many kids that of those 71% then go back and get their high school diploma? Is there any way to trace that and know if what kind of impact that might have?
I cannot produce that information. That's information Columbus City Schools would have.
Mm-hmm.
We see about 30% of the kids who come through PALS, they do return before the school year's out.
John Bridgeland?
There's good news on that front. For the first time this past school year, every state, every school district, every school in the United States has to calculate a common the graduation rate in a consistent manner.
Which has been a problem in the past.
Which has been a problem. Some school districts have been wildly, including the federal government, which include GED, included tracing students over time. So the common calculation is now those who start ninth grade, 4 years later, did you graduate from high school? And they adjust for transfers in and transfers out of the system. And they don't include GED because the market value of a GED in the economy is much, much lower than just a regular high school diploma. And so now we have good data with respect to every student in the state of Ohio. And we not only know whether or not they graduated from a high school, but if they transferred, where they transferred, and in fact, whether or not they're an actual dropout. So literally in 2 weeks from now, we will know with full accuracy what is actually going on in Ohio with respect to graduation rates.
Thanks, Alvin, for that call. Jonathan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi. I'm a big believer in, to motivate people, you need a carrot and a stick. And it sounds like you guys are working pretty good on the carrot, and you got a little bit of a stick, but I'd like to see a much larger stick.
Such as?
Such as, if you're a consistent dropout person, someone who thinks that they're going to be able to be a burden on society in the future, drop out now, maybe play video games, whatever their attitude is, I don't know, force them to work. Force them to do dirty jobs. Force them to... and I don't want to say chain gang type of thing, but it occurs to me that the Scared Straight program from 30 years ago or whatever, did an awful lot of scaring of those individuals away from drugs. I think scaring dropouts away from not dropping out would be a pretty good idea.
Thank you, Jonathan. There is a correlation between students who are – well, there's a high unemployment rate among young, particularly African-American men, which is – there is a correlation. Is there not? If you could get them jobs, wouldn't that be a great thing?
Well, they first have to acquire their education, also the job skills to give them jobs. A lot of kids come in and think that's going to be the cure-all, but if you're not prepared and have taken the steps to, one, look right, have your hair right, wear a belt, pull your pants up, coming there with the right attitude on time. And from owning a business 7 or 8 years ago, that's one of the things that probably caught me by surprise most of all was working with teens when my money was on the line to pay the bank back and they weren't quite prepared and ready mentally for the workforce. That's when I saw that there was something changing. There was just something changing.
I would add that the caller makes a really good point. If you look at this from a societal perspective, dropouts disproportionately are unemployed. They're receiving public assistance, which we as taxpayers are paying for. Tragically, their crime rates and drug abuse rates and incarceration rates are much higher. A dropout is 8 times more likely to be in prison than a high school graduate. The sticks that we currently have, as I mentioned, 12 governors raised the compulsory school wage law. Not only was that a powerful stick, a research study out of Harvard and MIT showed that it acted as a significant constraint on dropping out. And Don talked compellingly about these anti-truancy efforts and how over time, if it becomes a real record of truancy, the stick increases. But Don's also right that you've got to work on the skills and the communication and the ability to write, the ability to read, because if you're going to have a job beyond picking up trash on a highway or doing some of this public-spirited work, it's going to require what that education and programs like PALS give you.
I think, John, you said earlier that it's something, you know, someone just doesn't wake up one day and decide to be a high school dropout. It's something that starts when they're much younger. And you mentioned some of the programs that go back to the fourth grade. But we know that actually you can tell, you can make points when they're in the first grade and second grade because of reading skills and that sort
David
of thing.
David Brooks, who wrote this book, The Social Animal.
Right.
And looked at 30 years of research, reports in that book that at 18 months, you can see the interaction between a baby and a mother, and that's predictive of success in school and eventual dropout. Now, the data by third and fourth and fifth grades is overwhelmingly predictive. So if we know that as early as late elementary school and middle school, we've got to start building these supports much earlier than we have been.
And Don heard the idea of bringing the student and the parent together. I wanted to go back to that for a minute. That's because often the parents were a dropout. That's the pattern.
That there's an obvious pattern there. But a lot of times once they're picked up at the truancy center, they're in police custody, and we're trying to get that parent to come in there to retrieve their child. Once we need to provide some additional services for them, we'll do that. A lot of times we'll also refer kids to the AAA Academy, which is a school that gears to students who are 1 to 2 to maybe even 3 grades behind. And maybe the conventional high school just is not quite working for them because they're 17 years old in the ninth grade.
Right.
And maybe that's what's heavy on their mind. That's why they don't want to go to school. They want to be the oldest guy sitting in that class. They just quite don't fit in. So a lot of times in our truancy centers, we can kind of work and do some of those things. We also refer kids to the Job Corps. Sometimes just conventional school is just not going to work for you. You need some type of program where you can get your GED or high school diploma and also learn a skill or a trade.
We have a note from Barbara on Facebook. She says, I went to school back when Martin Luther King was killed. My school was 90% black, so there was a lot of violence directed towards the white kids. I started cutting school, got way behind, and quit at the age of 15 with my mom's permission. I then got pregnant, married, and at the age of 30, I got my GED diploma. Soon afterwards, I got a job and have been working the same job for 25 years. Thanks, Barbara, for that note. Coming up, we're going to hear from Pete Maniff of the Academic Acceleration Program. It's a charter school with the Columbus City Schools. And we'll talk about what they do to address the dropout crisis in the United States. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Taking a peek ahead, coming up on Hour 2 of All Sides today with Ann Fisher, a look at vacations, how to keep that vacation feeling even after the vacation is gone.
It's easy to renew your 89.7 NPR News membership. You can visit wosu.org/renew to make your contribution for another year. Your online renewal means less paperwork for 89.7 NPR News, and that means more of your donation supports the programs you enjoy. And while online, don't forget to set your membership to renew automatically. It's a quick, easy, and efficient way to show your support and can help reduce on-air fundraising. Visit wosu.org/renew for more information.
Checking the weather forecast for Central Ohio. It's a nice one. Sunny skies today, the high around 79 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 58. Thursday, sunny again with a high of 78 degrees, and clear skies on Thursday night, low down to 56. 83 on Friday. Clouds start to move in by Friday night, and then on Saturday, we'll have a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Partly sunny skies, a high near 82 degrees. Sunday, again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms.
Support for Classical 101 comes from Antioch University Midwest, holding an AUM Express application session on Saturday, August 13th to apply and enroll in just one day for adult students who want to start a master's degree. Details at midwest.antioch.edu.
We're talking about the high school dropout epidemic in the United States. If you have a story to tell about your own dropout experience, someone you know, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We've been talking with John Bridgeland, whose work on the high school dropout crisis has brought national attention to the issue. He is speaking today at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. For more information on that, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, and we'll have a link there for you. Also with us, Don Hurd, Executive Director of the Juvenile Justice and Truancy Programs for the YMCA of Central Ohio. And joining us now is Pete Banoff. He is with the Academic Acceleration Academy. The Academic Acceleration Academy is the only charter school sponsored by Columbus City Schools. Before that, he served as an administrator and teacher in secondary curriculum and workforce development for more than 35 years with the Columbus City Schools. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
So the Academic Acceleration Academy is Columbus Public Schools Charter School Dropout Recovery School. And that really caught my eye, Dropout Recovery School. Why do you call it recovery?
We really are targeting students that are 16 to 21 years of age. So they've been either disengaged or non-attending school. And we're trying to bring them back and, in all honesty, trying to help them rediscover their dreams and ambitions, and so that they move forward towards high school graduation and either specifically in job training areas or on to college.
What's different about it? Those would be the goals of any high school.
Except that the majority of these students have already been either disengaged in some fashion. So part of it is helping them rediscover what their ambitions are. And so as that, we've personalized the attention, and really we're a small school of about 200, and each of the students coming in are really given that specific what are their goals and how do they how are they going to attain those. So they become, it's that personalization, individualization, school of an average class size of 15 to 1, and it really is about the individual and helping them achieve.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Juan from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Just real quick, my comment was more or less, it has more to do with a personality than a GED or any type of training you can get moving forward.
It's like what kind of mentality?
Well, you have to have a go-get-em mentality. You know, you can't expect to get a GED and then think everything is going to fall into place after that. You have to have a personality, people skills, communication skills. It's a whole lot of other skills that come with succeeding in life.
You were a high school dropout.
Yes.
What'd you do?
Well, about 2001, I went back to get my GED through the Guy McGill program. And after that, I went to pick up a trade. But again, I already had, you know, I had my mind made up that I wanted to succeed, and the life I had lived up to that point was insufficient. And, you know, I just, and I already had the people skills and the communication skills that would take me, or that took me to the next level. So,
okay. Thank you, Juan, for that call. We appreciate it.
All right.
Pete Banoff, how do students get into your program? You said it's a small school, just 200, and it's a small student-teacher ratio. So how do you select them? Who are the lucky ones?
It is. 86% of our student body is from the Columbus city schools. And so we work directly and closely with the counselors and the administrators at each of those schools. And they, in return, will make recommendations of students that would fit our niche. And we are, in fact, not only about college orientation, but we do have a program that gives our students skills in the construction and the health trades. And unique to us, I think, is that we have linked up with our business partners. The Associated Builders and Contractors provides the training. For example, for our students in the construction areas, we're hooked up with the hospitals throughout the areas to provide healthcare training for our students. So we really do focus on recommendations of students that are interested in either attaining a college diploma or skill in those areas so they can become employed after.
You know, in our society, we're so geared towards science and math now. Everybody says that's what you've got to know so to achieve and to get ahead, whatever that means. And I'm wondering, how do you get through to kids what their own dreams are when there's so much? Maybe it's not math and science oriented. Yeah. Are they allowed to follow those dreams as well? How do you do that?
Absolutely. And our first conversation that we have with the student, and we ask that they bring in a significant adult within their life to the initial interview so we can discuss what's important and how we are going to set up goals and dreams and ambitions. And the math and science is really integrated in the curriculum itself. When we talk about the construction areas, we sometimes lose sight of the fact that there is so much science and math within the area and the work environment. It's more of how we present it and the choices. But they're all interfaced, interrelated, and integrated in the process themselves. There's not at least currently, we don't know of too many jobs out there that do not require math, science, reading as part of the process. And so those are the areas that we stress. It's just our method of presentation and how they're interrelated.
Doug, you're on the road. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. Yes, I was interested in the guy from the Academic Academy. I think he's got it. I think he's got it dialed in. I'd like to see something a little bit more on the lines of that, not remedially, but before kids get into trouble. I think we're all too one in this society in thinking that the path to a career is primary, secondary school, and college. And there are just some people out there that are more geared towards hands-on type trades. I know a fellow that decided after high school he wanted to be a mechanic, and so he became a BMW mechanic, and he's probably earning more than me. So these hands-on type trades, from what I understand, we don't have enough of them in our society, and we're pushing kids to just into the book learning and the academic portion of things instead of more of the trade and hands-on type learning. So that would be my only comment, and okay. I think he's got it right, but I'd like to see that. And here's a question for you. Have we taken any cues from any other cultures? I know the German society looks at their students differently than we do, and they try to help them with career paths. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Doug, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. John Bridgelin?
Yeah, Doug, we should bring you into our dropout prevention recovery efforts. You've hit the nail on the head. When we asked dropouts what would have kept them in school, the number one solution they cited was actually hands-on learning, service learning, things that gave them an ability to see the practical applications of what they were learning in school. Second, the labor market of the future tells us that about 36% of the jobs are not going to be requiring four-year college degrees or beyond, but actually one-year vocational and technical or two-year community college associate's degrees. So the draw from the marketplace is very powerful. And finally, to your point about, have we learned anything from other countries? There's a wonderful report called Pathways to Prosperity by Bob Schwartz from Harvard. He went over and studied the systems of Germany and Britain and France and a lot of our European counterparts to look at how they're training a lot of their students on and providing them choice and multiple pathways, not just the traditional path of four-year college and graduate school, but what are the other alternatives for those who may not want to take that route but want to go a vocational or technical route. So you're exactly right, and I don't think we've had enough of a discussion in this country about providing sufficient pathways for those many, many students who are going to meet this labor market need of the future.
Again, it seems like the sort of conversation you have to start having with a kid at a very young age so that it's not this, okay, now it's time to think about your life.
Right. And to that point, we these dropout recovery programs actually do that very effectively. But the programs that are actually working to keep more young people on track to graduate are doing it as early as elementary school, finding out who these kids are, what they want to be, and then provide them choices along the way so they can fulfill their dreams.
Don in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Well,
good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
How you doing this morning?
Very well.
Good. My point that I'd like to make is I think one of the things with the dropouts that like I experienced as a young man was that it was the structure of the home, and I think a lot of people don't realize that that has such a bearing on a young man or a young lady who doesn't have much structure and doesn't know what to do and the direction to go, and all they have is basically, you know, their friends around them or people in school. And if there's nothing at home, it makes it very, very hard for them to have a directional compass.
You were a high school dropout.
Yes, ma'am.
And what'd you do?
I've always worked. I've always worked hard. Both my parents were alcoholics. So I had to basically just... I just kept working, and then I ended up getting married, and I have three children, and all of them have graduated from Ohio State, and I've had the same job for 27 years. So I'm an exception, but I've always worked hard. I just believe that no matter what, I just had to overcome it. And
well, it's and, that, I think that's that get up and go someone was talking about earlier.
Well, I'm 55, and I got to be honest with you, the stigma followed me for the longest time, and I had a really tough time with it. But I persevered. I don't know how to explain it to you, but it was just one of those things where I wasn't going to let it get me down. And I think a lot of these kids that don't have a sounding board or somebody to talk to, it makes it very hard for them to overcome it. I also had a disability. I was ADHD, and at that time, they did not know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I think, you know, now that, they've got more of a handle on it, it makes it a little bit easier. But, without a structure at home and it being dysfunctional, the kids behind the eight ball.
Don, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Take care. An email from James to that point. He says it's hard to sell kids on the value of education when people with graduate degrees are laid off and losing their homes. Now, Don was a great example of someone who stuck with it and is lucky enough to still have a job after 27 years. That's an anomaly in this day and age. But what do you tell Pete Manoff, what do you tell the kids if they come to you and say, what difference does it make?
I think Don had an interesting point that we should not lose, and that is that we talk about dropouts sometimes as if they're individuals that do not have dreams and aspirations. And the majority of our students that do drop out or find themselves in odd situations are want to be successful in life and are willing to try to pursue and succeed in those areas. Now, the one thing is that's been said numerous times today, and that is that society is changing constantly. The work demand is changing. And the one thing that we know for sure and what we tell our students is that the only certain thing and the only equalizer in life is education. And so, therefore, they need to be prepared for change because change is inevitable. And so we work with them trying to instill within them that aspect that the education and attainment at the highest degree and that it doesn't finish with us. That was why we went beyond just a high school diploma and stressing to them that there must be either a skill that you pursue, apprenticeship, or continue on into the educational endeavors.
There's been an interesting article floating around the last day or so. I think it's the University of Arizona's president, talking about how there's too much emphasis on what colleges are attracting into their as a student body instead of worrying about what's coming out the other end. Mm-hmm. And is that play a role in it? Because if you don't get, maybe you get a GED, but you can't get into college with a GED. Mm-hmm. You have to have a high school diploma or an equivalency diploma, some kind of facsimile of that. What happens with that, John Bridgeland? I mean, you're really shut off.
Yeah, you are shut off, and you need to have a high school diploma or GED to move on through the system. But a lot of these college presidents are taking this issue of college completion on. We've done a great job over the last 100 years giving access to college, you know, with Pell Grants and scholarships and all sorts of incentives, given low-income Americans access, you know, equal access to college. The tragedy is that we create a situation of high debt and no diploma. Only 56% of those who enter college today actually graduate in 6 years, not four. And less than 30% of those who enter a two-year community college graduate in 3 years. So basically, a lot of this generation is accumulating all these debts and then don't have a degree to get the job that can help pay it off. So the college presidents are really getting organized to focus not just on the – obviously, our country is focused on high school graduation rates, but college graduation rates.
Murph from Grove City, you're on the air. We only have about 30 seconds, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Thanks for the call.
I'm a former vocational teacher for mm-hmm. Columbus. And I will tell you that that program helped more kids get jobs than anything you've been talking about now. I mean, we were able to get kids that couldn't even read or write to do mechanical jobs and earn a paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
I don't know what's happened to the program now. It's just pretty much shut down, but
they're different.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Thanks, Murph, for that call. I appreciate it. And thanks for all the calls and all the emails. I want to thank my guests as well. Pete Maniff, thank you so much for joining us today. Pete is with the Academic Acceleration Academy. That's the only charter school sponsored by Columbus City Schools. And we appreciate you joining us and telling us about the school.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
Also with us is Don Hurd. He's Executive Director of the Juvenile Justice Program at the YMCA of Central Ohio. Don, thanks for being here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And John Bridgeland, he is works on high school dropout crisis. His work on the high school dropout crisis in the United States has helped bring national attention to the issue. He will bring more attention to the issue today at noon at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. If you want more information, go to WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Go ahead.